Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
I didn't know where writing really ends up. I just write it when I feel compelled to. Somewhat like just documenting that moment of like remembering stuff or just recounting the, like events of the past few months or the year once it all comes to me, to sort of catch up on my own life and take into account all that's happened.
Welcome to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we'll be listening to a conversation between True False programmer Abby Sun and Fest alum filmmaker Miko Revereza. In his latest film, No Data Plan, Revereza eschews a faceless off-screen narrator in favor of a voiceless, subtitled one, along with the interviews of friends and family. No Data Plan reimagines the road trip movie as a film where the bulk of the action happens off-screen.
When I shot the film, I wasn't sure. I was always struggling with the idea of a voiceover. And I forget, but maybe I was putting this like subtitle without a voice on top of the image to leave as a placeholder, but never got around to doing a lot of the voiceovers, but actually felt that it was more appropriate to leave out the voice. I think that the voice or the voiceless subtitle functions in a mode that's sort of like, it's diaristic, but it's also like composed and like literary. And I didn't really want to voice over that.
In terms of the different elements in your film, why were they important for you to include in this film? Like, what led you to include the interviews and who are the people being interviewed, for instance?
I think like the different elements, one of them is this voiceless narration as subtitle. Another one is my grandmother, and she's talking about sort of this history of the Philippines and her province and her being part of this aristocratic family that was passed, that had passed all this land from the Spanish and were sort of the rulers of that province. Other ones are kind of random that are actually voiceovers. One of them is my friend Lee Natcham, who is talking about like her impressions of Drake. And then another one is my friend Carolina, and I just asked her like what was her a recent dream she remembers. I was just kind of, I didn't have any like direction really. I wanted it to sort of have the train as a journey, and sitting in the train, there's this linear thing that goes from one thing to the next, and it has a logical order based on geography to go from west to east. But then there's another experience of experiencing stories that are overheard, and also experiencing my own mind going through its travels that are far off, far away from this timeline of being on the train, and far away from even the present day, and just sort of random and kind of like freewheeling through my consciousness or whatever. When I was recording voiceovers, I kind of wanted it to have that quality of just like what is being conversed or thought of at the moment or recalled from far away.
Yeah, your film definitely has an oniric quality to it, especially in the nighttime scenes. And then towards the end of the film, everything gets like very disturbed in the sense, like there's one scene in which we see you, it looks like you're running to catch the next train or something. And then in terms of the video and what you're shooting, like parts of your body start appearing in the shots more. It's as if you're experimenting. It kind of reminded me of someone getting bored.
Totally. That's practically the whole film. And I would like to add also that I don't know if I even had the intention of making a film to begin with, but I just didn't even have anything better to do on the train but shoot.
In a sense, that's a lot of, that's representational of what trips are like. They are this in-between spaces, and I've seen quite a few films lately of kind of raiding as an essential experience of sorts. Especially, I think, because it heightens some of the things that happens in your film, like the stop by Border Patrol, for instance, because mm-hmm. in terms of actual plot points, so little happens until that
yeah.
point.
As far as like actual things happening.
Like in the video, but of course yeah. in your voiceless narrator, many things are happening.
Right.
And actually in terms of like how you time kind of the revelations, because I've actually been describing this film to other people as kind of a documentary thriller of sorts. There's absolutely a mystery at its core. What are the details of your mother's affair? And what happens between your parents and then also their relationship to you? And so the way that you're timing, kind of doling out these details, is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I like that documentary thriller aspect, or I don't know, I've never heard of that, but I like that it's thrilling, or thriller mystery affair kind of situation.
Yeah.
I guess it kind of does have like noir-ish elements to it, but I don't think that there's much constructed, and that's kind of like feels tragic to think about that. I don't know, this is actually real.
Coming up, Mika Revaretza discusses how his status as an undocumented immigrant shapes his filmmaking process.
It's personal because it's like the camera is on me and it's a close space of just, even this camera movement across the country is like a document of migration. Like there's no crew or anything, it's just me and the camera.
First, a quick word from our sponsor. Hey, listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. And that is, in fact, where we are sitting right now in the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. We're here with Ryan Vermeulener, news director for KBIA and assistant professor of journalism, and he is going to tell us a little bit about the Missouri Method. Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing. Just want to know about the Missouri Method. What is that?
So anytime you ask a journalism professor here about that, they always use analogies for it. And one of my favorite ones that someone at the Missouri in the newspaper that operates the journalism school said
once
was...
Oh, you got a newspaper?
Yeah, we got a newspaper and TV station, radio station. But this newspaper editor was like, it's kind of like you're an air traffic controller, but none of the pilots have their licenses. Because we cut students loose. We just let them go crazy in actual professional newsrooms. And when I go to public radio conferences and tell them that we have 70 to 100 journalism students working in our newsroom as reporters, anchors, show hosts, producing podcasts like this one you're listening
like
to right
one.
Now.
Yeah.
These people look at me like I'm crazy because they're like, you give that kind of control to people that you don't know if you can trust. And it's like, yeah, we do. And it's kind of like, you push the bird out of the nest, right? And yes, lots of them do fall flat on the ground, and that's fine, and that's part of it. And I'd rather them fall flat on the ground here than out in the world.
True.
But a lot of them fly, right? And they do. They like, we've had students win national professional awards competing against professionals for stories that they've done here. Yeah, as students.
Yeah.
And they win all the student awards. They win like all the student awards too. But even professional awards, Edward R. Murrow Awards, students have them on their resume before they leave here at the University of Missouri. It's crazy.
Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeldt. On this episode, programmer Abby Sun talks with filmmaker Mika Revaretza about his film No Data Plan, which will play at True False 2019. He shot this film during a 3-day train ride from Los Angeles to New York. Revaretza, an undocumented immigrant, took the train because his ID was expired. That experience helped inform Revaretza's use of subtitles.
So actually, I have a theory that I want to run by you. about the way that the subtitles are working in your film as text, because it was something I was noticing today when I was rewatching your film this morning. I noticed that what you were shooting itself actually had a lot of text in it, and that the things that you were shooting, they were like of signs or of text on people's shirts that I'd never read because I was reading the subtitles instead of what was in the video. To me, I guess my theory, this is what I was thinking at the time, was that it was the first time really that I'd really thought about being othered by language in my own first language. Like this was a feeling of, because I was so engrossed in reading subtitles like I would for a film in a language that's not English or not in Mandarin, something that I don't understand, then there are a lot of things that I miss in the video because I'm so engrossed in the subtitles. But I'm very unused to having that feeling in a film that's in English.
I don't know. There's always this sort of balance that can never, I don't think, is achieved, that there will always be something missed. And I've come to terms with that, that everything in the frame and even like it being captured and presented on screen, it cannot be all consumed. And yeah, you're right. There are a lot of things, a lot of texts that go by when you're on the train, whether it be the text on intermodal shipping containers. I found that really interesting. Or sort of the small text on the window that tells sort of the specs of like the thickness or the type of glass it is, or like the signage at stations. Or I think one of my favorite ones was this this guy's jacket, and it just says
adventures
on the back. Yeah, adventures.
Explore like, new way. Anywhere, explore new no ways. Question. Yeah.
So sick. I want that.
It was amazing. Actually, I wrote that down because your subtitles at the same time are the revelation of the giant stuffed Totoro in all caps. Which, because I was so engrossed by the subtitles, like the times I'd watched your film previously, because that was also you playing with the stylization of the subtitles. It was the first time I'd seen subtitles like written in a way that kind of emphasized how someone would deliver. How were you editing that? Were you reading it out loud to yourself? What were you doing?
There's like dramatic timing, but also the timing of like that it relates to the image, and then so they start like bleeding over each other. I want those things to sort of correlate. I mean, part of it is also like having to do with a cadence or something, as if it was read. Or I don't know, I wanted that voice to be like read in the person watching it, so they're like experiencing it in that way too.
Was there anything you didn't want that you were trying to avoid with the subtitles?
I was concerned about the subtitles competing with the image and sort of like the image being lost when the subtitle is up. But I don't know. It's something that I can live with.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like your film is a lot about contradictions and the things that you can and can't see. Like you even have a line about when you took the photo of your mother and her boyfriend, I suppose, and about how you framed the photo for the license plate. I think you were very clear that your film is about being very careful on the viewer's part. So I feel like, in a sense, like your film is a gauntlet thrown to an audience, too. Like, if we miss things in the film, then we're not looking hard enough, maybe.
Yeah, or, I mean, like, even if you are looking hard enough, you can't see everything. And even if I was looking hard enough on the train, like, there's no way for me to capture the entire journey. Like, I've taken this train ride across the country a couple times, and yeah, I feel like every time you see something, you see it a different way. You notice different things. I don't know, yeah. So I think, you know, like the experience of watching this film can be many things.
Coming up, Miko Revereza talks about his grandmother, his family history, and how a road trip can be, well, boring. Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. Miko Revereza's new film, No Data Plan, doesn't feature a narrator. Instead, the film moves forward with the use of various interviews. One of those interviewees is his grandmother, who recounts her life in the Philippines. The film includes long shots in which very little happens visually. And for Revereza, that's perfectly fine.
One of those things could be that it's boring too, I think, of watching these images, but that is also the experience of the train. And I don't know, like, people may fall asleep, but I fell asleep on the train and missed a lot of things. Or people may like doze off and think about other things, daydream about like a space that's outside of the cinema or the train. And that's okay too, because like that's what the train was like.
Okay, so actually going back to kind of speaking freeform, in a way, so the voiceover by your grandmother is absolutely the one that digs into like the history of your family, your father's background, like a sort of sociological analysis of slavery / inequality in the Philippines versus the U.S. Did you prompt her at all? What did you ask her?
She's amazing whenever I ask her anything. I mean, it's one of the things that I really love, like, experiencing with her, is when she could just go off on long tangents and just talk about her upbringing in the Philippines. And it's not really like, she says it with such detail, and there's so much in the details that she gives. It's so rich. And then, like, when I hear her speak about the Philippines, like, in the, like, early 20th century and what society was like, it just brings up, like, everything. It's like a massive zoom out of my entire life, which gives context to everything, even being here in the United States as an undocumented immigrant. Like, these are the events and situations which has paved the way for us to be here.
Were you looking for a history of your family when you were interviewing her, or were you just kind of chatting and then press record on a recorder nearby?
I think I asked her about it, not necessarily a history of our family, but sort of just like prying into like first a personal history of myself and then my parents. And then, like, she just goes off on tangents. And then some of those tangents are, like, are so fascinating. I feel like she has so many stories. I forgot if this made it in the film, but she talked about, like, down the steps from, like, her ancestral home was this, like, American encampment when, like, Douglas MacArthur came in World War II. And that, like, there was like this huge tent with like a symphony orchestra or something. And then her and her cousins would sneak over there to go dancing, stuff like that. And I don't know, I guess one time we were looking through in like Google Street View of this place, and we were just looking for that like concrete slab that was still left there by the American forces.
That did not make it into the film, and it's fascinating. but what did make it into the film was sort of her talking about, there's one point in which she seems to be responding to you a little bit, maybe to something that you said that you cut out, or maybe to something that you had said earlier, where she says, well, I don't know if this is slavery or not, whether that's slavery or whether this is slavery.
Yeah, I probably was like, isn't that slavery?
Yes. I was like, this definitely sounds like Miko asked that question. Isn't that slavery? But she has a really interesting conclusion, which is that things are different in America. Here, everyone is equal. Mm-hmm. Does she see her experience as something that is much more equal than in the Philippines?
Perhaps she sees her experience here, or our experience here in the U.S., as like falling from this sort of like the traditions of like bourgeois class of the Philippines and that type of class structure before, which her idea of coming here to the U.S., like there's a, you know, you like trade those things and the sort of image of the U.S., which is portrayed even in the Philippines, is that everyone is equal. So that's sort of the script. It's simple to just repeat that, like that's the slogan, like everyone here is equal, so we are equal to everyone else. I don't know how she thinks about class within the States. I wonder if my parents feel a certain like oppression of class towards them, or if it's just me that has observed like the workings of class within the United States to be oppressive towards us, and being undocumented as sort of being as like an effect of those structures.
Well, okay, Miko, is there anything else you wanted to say?
I mean, thank you for having me, one, and thank you for having me again at the festival this year. I'm very excited to be screening this there. I don't know much to say in regards to the film, because I'm still sort of processing what it all means, and I'm hoping that upon its premiere, that, like, I don't know, you talking to you right now gives it more context for me, and I'm excited to engage with people like at festivals, and then I feel like they'll add on to the context. It feels like a really simple film. Perhaps it came together really quick because it was like obviously chronological from like one place to the next. Because this is lived experience, it's inherently complicated because of my situation. It's hard to really like contextualize it beyond what I know or what is given in my own life. So this is always such a privilege, and I'm excited to like engage with you and like the audiences about it.
Miko Revaretsa is the director of No Data Plan, which will play at True False 2019. His short film, Disintegration 93-96, was featured at True False 2018. No Data Plan is his first feature-length film. This episode was produced and edited by Chris Olchevsky. Special thanks to Janet Saidi, Sebastian Martinez, and Ryan Femuliner. Our music was produced by Tim Pilcher using sounds from the True False Film Fest. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.